First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We're recording this on Sunday morning, July 30th, 2023. I'm Larry Rhodes, or DJ Doubter 5, and as usual, we have our co-host, DJ Wombat. Hello, Wombat.
Hey, I'm the Wombat.
Yeah. Cranking. And our guests today are Boudreaux, welcome, and hey, John Richards from England, welcome.
Hello.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. If you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer, in your town, well, you're just not. I'd wager on it. In Knoxville, here in the middle of the Bible Belt, we have a group of over 1,000 of us, pretty much 1,100 now. We're Atheist Society of Knoxville, or ASK, and we'll tell you more about us after the mid-show break, so be sure to stick around. Wombat, what's our topic today?
So we're going to go over more ideas of dogma popping up in places where they don't necessarily help the conversation move forward, and also address some of the comments that were brought to us from last episode. Before we do that, though, want to just do a quick touching of base and seeing how everyone has been. Then we can do a recap from last week's episode and go into the meat and potatoes of the show. John Richards, your quest of chaos over in UK. How have you been, my friend?
Yeah, I've been fine. Thank you. Yep. And I'm getting on with organizing the next event that we're staging in the Midlands here. Not Alabama, not Birmingham, right. Alabama.
Not the real original.
I checked out Birmingham, Alabama. It's a little piddly little place of just about 200,000 people. This Birmingham is a million.
Wow.
Big Daddy Birmingham.
Big Daddy Birmingham. We love it. Okay, yeah. Cool. Well, I hope you have a good time, and I hope you can get as good a fried chicken as the
I'm sure we can. Birmingham. Yeah, yeah. there will be more news about this in the next few weeks. And okay. I've just launched the Eventbrite, the ticket sales site.
So it's great.
Coming along nicely.
Looking forward to it. Boudreaux, of course, you're on next on the docket. Love the shirt. What's going on with you?
Well, I'll tell you about the shirt because that's most recently I ran the Crank and Boom Sprint for Scoops. It's a 3K and you get to eat ice cream after you run. It's super hot, but it's right down the road and we do it. This is maybe the fourth or fifth year we've done it. And this year I placed third in my age group.
Nice.
And my daughter ran alongside me and she placed first in her age group.
That's great. Look at you. That's awesome. You know, I was thinking the longer you stay running in those 5K events, the more harder the competition gets is one of the things I had noted. So like back when I was doing 5Ks, when I just started college, I would get like maybe top five. And then after a while, it started being 17 and then like 30th. And I did one recently earlier this year and I didn't get anywhere close to the podium. I was like 18, but when I looked around, it was just all the crazy dudes who like stuck around and kept doing it. So like third is like really, really good. Actually, you have to bias it that way. It's actually really nice. You're one of the guys that stuck around. That's awesome.
Dry.
Good job, man. Good job. And also congrats to the daughter for getting first place. That's awesome too. And you have a pantheon of trophies in your garage. I've seen that before. So good job on getting another one. Good job on getting another one. Larry, how have you been, my friend?
I'm doing fine. Still just working and playing computer games. I finished up Horizon New Dawn. Been going back in and complete the map and stuff. But I run out of quests, though.
Did you get the true armor that like replenishes your health?
Yeah.
And like, Okay.
Yeah, then it looks good, especially in those cold climbs.
Yes, it's really, really good. I'm glad you scraped the bottom of the barrel of that game. It's a fun game. What's the next one on the plate, if you have one?
Oh, well, there's one coming out in September. It's a space game. The name doesn't come to me right off.
Starchild?
Starfield. Starfield. Yeah.
Okay.
It's
okay.
By the same people who did Skyrim. So right. It should be awesome.
It should be awesome.
It should be awesome.
We're going to take that quote and put it on the top of the box. We just okay. Larry wrote, it should be awesome. Buy it. This yep. would be good. So, guys, I've been pretty good. It's been really, really hot. I know it's only going to get hotter, but we've taken opportunities to participate with some disc golf leagues that we're starting at a local school. We have a 3D printing lab at our site, so we're actually able to print 3D discs, and we can change the top shape of the plate or the bottom shape of the plate and then have the kids try them out and explain why the discs fly differently as a result of changing their aerodynamics. So like we are literally allowing them to design a disc on a course that they built themselves, more or less. They planted the trees. We didn't help to get mm-hmm. the land, but we did help them to like figure out how to use the land well to like make a full mm-hmm. 9-hole course like properly. And they've made the tee pads themselves. So like the sixth graders made the tee pads, then they got ready to go to seventh grade. So now we have a new like constantly working on this course. It's really great. The main thing I'd like to say is it's fun to be outdoors. It's fun to be active. And I want everyone to appreciate like the idea that we are alive once and we have this beautiful thing outside called nature. We should take opportunities to enjoy it. Don't just play video games like Larry, though he deserves. Larry, you've had a long life. You deserve to do whatever you want. You can do it.
I've been outside lots.
He's earned it. But take your 5Ks, do your quest for chaos in Birmingham, Alabama. Do whatever you need to do for motorcycling. But I wanted to talk about how we made the internet upset yesterday or last week, because we did a show on the aspect of trans inclusion or trans women inclusion in female sports and why that was such a heated debate and why there's so much dogma involved in that conversation and how much better it would be if we removed the dogma and left more room for science and empathy to take place, to have a more pragmatic and productive conversation. However, in the process of talking about it, even just the nature of it, we found that like there's a lot of contentious baggage or words with a lot of baggage that people will ask for definitions on and not agree even on the definitions, because there's a lot of potential minefields even with the way how people interpret these words. And so I thought that's a fair statement. We never really defined what we meant by things like cis or trans or even woman or even gender. At the top, we just sort of jumped in with the assumption that we all knew what those terms meant. And then likewise, we never really, if you've ever seen me playing with my nose, I'm trying to hold back a sneeze.
Bless you.
Excuse me. Todd. Thank you. Bless thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Bless me. Anyway.
No. Gesundheit, not bless you.
No. They don't own that word. I can say bless you. It's all good. I do feel blessed. So I would say this too. The idea, so we had a lot of comments that were valid with regard to how we handle that conversation. Nothing that was like particularly like needling at any of us. There was one question of like, hey, you guys consider yourself non-dogmatic. Where's your actual proof? We'll go over those in the show. But what I did want to start off with was a comment that I'll lead with Boudreaux as a response for. And this is from a friend of the show who his name is Robin. She's been on the show before they have been on the show before. Our Robin asks, in the ongoing conversations about transgender inclusion in sports, I believe it's crucial to clarify the definitions we use, especially the term cis. Over time, its meaning has evolved rapidly, leading to misunderstandings and miscommunication. So as someone in my 50s, I vividly remember when female athletes I vividly remember when female athletes challenging societal norms was groundbreaking, as sports were predominantly seen as a male domain. When women who participated in sports defied gender-based stereotypes, that was a new circumstance. And it's intriguing now to see how the majority of women in sports are now labeled as cis, aligning with the cultural expectations linked to their biological sex. This observation makes me wonder how much this debate has become generational. Could we delve into these changing definitions and how changing definitions impact our dialogue, and how generational perspectives influence the way we approach topics. And so, Eric, my question for you is, do you not see a case for not just on trans, but like what it means to be a Christian, what it means to be Black or white, change over time and leading to more complications on how we can have meaningful conversations to come to learn how we can treat each other better, and how dogmatic approaches to, I know what this definition is, it's not changing, this is the way it is, this is the way it's always been, can actually get in the way. You want to speak to that for a bit?
Yeah. I wasn't on the call last week, so I don't know all the nuances of your conversation there, but tying it into Christianity and dogmatic thinking, first thing my mind went to is, you know, a lot of, I would say, successful or clever, progressive, you know, churches, dogmatic thinkers have kind of shifted with modernity, you know, when it comes to things like, you know, gay rights and other progressive things that, you know, they're realizing we're going to lose, you know, butts in pews if we don't kind of accept certain things. So if I take what your question is, I do see that there are going to be some religions that just, you know, draw the line in the sand and say, no, we're not changing on this. This is how it is. But others, and I think the ones that are going to survive or, you know, become more popular are going to be the ones that do change.
Yeah. So can I ask? Go ahead, Larry, go for it.
I was just going to say, yeah, the problem is that the book doesn't change. And the preachers sometimes can work around that by retranslating their meanings of it. But the book itself has very definite words that cannot, you know, be resold in a different way. And some people don't want to do that and will go to the cross or go to the, you know, die on that hill, as it were.
So does that mean that the book won't survive? Because I mean, the book's been doing a pretty good job surviving.
I think it's going to survive, and that's the problem. We just have to realize, people have to come to the realization that it's not gospel. It's not true. It's a story. In other words, it's a collection of stories that may or may not have any relevance and reality, as it were.
We did see a pretty big change when the Old Testament got pushed away and the New Testament came in. I mean, will we see something like that in our lifetime?
Well, I mean, think about it. Like every 200 years. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, think about it is, there was no concept of hell before the New Testament. So, I mean, it brought some good stuff, admittedly, but it also brought some very bad stuff. And, you know, Jefferson tried to get rid of, Thomas Jefferson, that is, tried to get rid of all the old stuff and get rid of the miracles and stuff. He created his own Jeffersonian Bible. You can look it up on the internet. You can actually buy it on Amazon if you wanted to. But the Bible, you know, the old Bible still perseveres, as it were. And that's a problem.
Boudreaux, my follow-up would be, you know, we had the Old Testament and people still just follow Old Testament. Like there's so many Judaic religions that are just the Old Testament. The New Testament is like an add-on DLC pack, if you will, Larry, because he's the game in the room. And then we have Mormons, and then we have, Islam. Like when you think about it, like all these things are tied, all these major religions are actually fundamentally tied to the same Judaic gospel. And then there's offshoots from that are completely unrelated, Jehovah's Witnesses, that still have something that looks very similar to the Bible, but they will claim as a very different thing. It's bifurcation. And I feel like through that bifurcation or that fragmentation and separation, we still get stratified things that fall off and die because they just couldn't keep up with the times. And then new versions that are like new flavors of ice cream on your t-shirt that are just popular enough to maintain until the next generation. I think that's how religion stays alive. Go ahead, John. It sounds like you're on mute, my buddy. Go ahead, say what you got to say. Oh, no, he's on mute. Okay, he says...
Coming. There we go. Okay. I'd slid the window up to the side and couldn't get the unmute button. Mm-hmm. But there's the Bible has never really been gospel the way the Christians would like to make out that it has been. It's never really been the immutable word of God because as you pointed out, there was the Old Testament and then there was the update, the New Testament came along. And so they've already got the problem of trying to reconcile those two different versions of how society should be run. But what I discovered very recently is in early 19th century England, a special Bible was produced for use in the British West Indies. It was the Negro Slaves Bible. Really? I mean, it's shameful to talk about it today, isn't it?
Go ahead. But
back then, the Bible was a colonial tool. You know, it's cheaper than bullets. In fact, once you've got people on board to it, they'll pay you for more of that service by making collections.
Very true.
So this particular slave Bible, as it came to be called, it omitted, let me have a look, Exodus, the Book of Psalms, the Book of Revelations.
Why in the world would they take out Exodus of all books? It's such a great book on learning how to treat other people how they want to be treated. That's so crazy.
Well, they thought that it could instill in slaves a dangerous hope for freedom and dream of equality.
So yeah, we have, and listen, even within Christian, one single Christian denomination, they may have different variations of the same holy book. You know, how many different versions of the standard Christian book is there, from King James to like New International Version to the modified text, like to the highlighted ones with additional commentary from like 14 different other biblical scholars. Like these are all you're influencing and correcting and citing and putting ear notes on God's holy book. That seems fairly audacious to me. What I wanted to comment on what Larry was saying, because I think there's some slight tweaking that I'd say. You said people need to realize that the Bible's not true. I agree that people need to realize. I would say to more nuanced point, it's not so much that the Bible isn't true, because I don't want to have to go through that effort to prove something not that is a negative. I'd rather just realize that there's more reliable systems to determine what is true than just looking at the Bible or using faith. And I'll apply that back to the trans conversation that we were having last week, because the science, at least with regard to physiological differences between biological males and females, right? Like men, women, I'm trying to make a point that the scientific data has unanimously determined that there's physiological differences between the two. It is just what it is. And while that might upset people, the path forward isn't to obscure that data or ignore it. It's just recognize it and then reconcile with coming up with still better ways to treat people in light of this reality, rather than, you know, saying this doesn't exist and we'll just venture forward with our definitions and our movement. Like, we have a good way of determining objective reality with science, and we can still be empathetic on top of that. And so my recommendation would be, we need to realize that we have very reliable systems that are testable, that are falsifiable, that are repeatable, and this is good. And we should listen to, or at least use that method in congruence with how we come up with rules to like best protect people and serve our interests. Any concerns or disagreements?
Well, yeah, I think at least we're taking the position that it's a problem to be solved. You know, it's something that we need to work on and get better at later on, you know, as we understand the problem more going forward. It is not black and white and something to be solved simply by referring to an old book or an old way of thinking.
Yes, yes. And if
we need
anything,
a new book.
We need a new book.
Well, new books become old books before long. You know
what? The other thing that
we need a new method. How's that? And that is the scientific method.
Science is all about new methods. Science is also about giving us usable words to work with, usable definitions, or like clearly defined terms.
Yeah, down with books.
Because lacking meaningful variables or definitions, we're talking past each other. And I feel like that goes to both the generational divide on certain aspects, Like, what does it mean to be Black? What does it mean to be Christian? It's a very different thing to be Christian today than it meant 60 years ago, right? Or even 100 years ago or 200 years ago. So let's not just say the same words and assume we mean the same thing. If there was a better way to express something, let's look at those definitions, but let's use a scientific approach so that we can define them very well, test them out, make sure they meet the definition. And if we need to talk about something outside of that term, we just come up with a new definition. But we just can't, if we're going to come up with new words for something, you got to make them clear what you're talking about. Otherwise, you're only obfuscating what could be a very productive conversation. And so, yes, I do think there are generational perspectives that influence how we think, how we talk to each other. And I do think the words we use change. I do think the science that we use also changes, but tends to get us closer to a specified target. And we'll, and when we change science, it's typically when we're evolving to like a very specific point. And that's okay too. So like, Jonathan, I'll throw this question out at you. I just said science changes. Is that true in your opinion? And do you think that's a fair thing to say?
Yes, and it's one of the strengths, because we don't have a doctrine that we stick to dogmatically. We know that we're only making models of the universe, and we know that we can't show them to be 100% absolute, because tomorrow we might discover something inconsistent. So the only way we can say that we were right will be at the end of time. So it's a strength. It's being able to let go of something and realize that you were wrong.
Right.
That's the only way we can be certain about something, when it's proved to be wrong.
Larry.
Well, yeah, I'd like to say that the only way that you can disprove science is with more science.
Right.
Yeah. There's not one time where like the Bible has proven science wrong.
Right. Yeah. The great thing about the scientific approach is that it's open to new data and willing to modify models as a result. And that's not a failure of science. That's just a demonstration.
The strength of science
works. Yeah. Yes. And that's why I say there's room for science in an empathetic conversation about how to treat people, because it's science that doesn't have a horse in the race. Like, science is in the interest of trying to come up with just accurate ways to express how reality works. It's just models that we use to understand how things are. It will change and adapt as a result. And it's one of the best tools that we have. We should be
Ask Newton and Einstein.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For instance,
they're both dead. Is that good?
How many times have you seen a person come online saying they've proven evolution wrong?
Right.
But they, not a single one of them have put up for a Nobel Prize, which actually would win if prove evolution wrong. I mean, because we want, scientists want to be proven wrong if they are wrong. I mean, they're looking for truth, not proving that their answer is right for all time. They want to know the truth.
Right, right. And we just want to be able to understand things in a consistent way. That's also the thing with...
This is a big difference between the mindset of people who think scientifically and those who think theistically.
Or dogmatically.
Exactly. Because they own their doctrine. They can't justify it and point and say, look, there's the explanation, there's the fact. They have to own it and claim it and argue for it as though it's their baby. As a result of which, they hate to be proven wrong. They hate to have anybody criticize them, because they have face to lose. They will be humiliated, embarrassed, because they've nailed their flag to the wrong mast. Am I mixing metaphors here? This is where we need Dredd to come in and have a pirate's mast.
Right. So, Boudreaux, I'll throw this out at you. You are outspokenly atheist. You are outspokenly fans of boring people who've written books before. I forgot the name already. That's how much sticks with me.
What? Ham Saris? Ham Saris.
There you go. Sam Saris. There it is. I'm wondering, you know, in the event that you ever find out that you actually were wrong, how big of a crush to your ego would that be, and how quickly can we expect to see some, you know, Jesus flags or Cthulhu flags in your car?
Well, like,
are
I,
you Are you so pro atheist that if it was ever proven to you that a God does exist, you would just keep it under your hat and not share it with everybody?
I think that's okay. Fantastic question. And I have to be poetic and quote Sam Harris and say, one of the things he said over and over again is, I don't want to be wrong any longer than I have to be. So I'm with him on that. Like,
okay.
I don't want to be right about being an atheist, or I don't want to be an atheist just because that's what I, you know, identify as. Right. That's just where my logic has led me, and that's where I am. So, and that's a good point too. One of the things we talk about in our summit group is, you know, the Dawkins scale of belief. One of the points of it is a 7 is a Gnostic atheist. It's an atheist that knows there's no God. And I'm not that. I'm a, you know, slightly below 7, which is an agnostic atheist. Right. I don't know if there's a God, yes or no, but I don't believe in one. So yeah, if someone ever, and I've even said on the program with you guys and to maybe folks' dismay that, you know, I don't even need that much proof of a God. Just a few things, like if all religions had exactly the same origin story, or it wouldn't take a lot, at least for a young me to stay with religion.
It wasn't so geo-locked, right? Like, some consistency. If the messaging made sense across different groups, like, then you can at least say, oh, it's all pointing to the same thing. We just have different points of view based on how we're brought up. This seems to be very, very varied.
Like we talked about the cross, the very simple symbol that, you happen to see among, you know, several religions, but, you know, drop a bunch of toothpicks on the ground and you're going to see crosses. If there was a really elaborate, even like the Star of David, if the Star of David existed in every religion, you know, I'd be like, but to your point, yes, if God came down here and did his whole dog and pony show again, I'd get in line to, you know,
hey, Jesus. So we're going to take a break. When we get back, I'd love to talk about how the difference between how we identify versus what's actually just a descriptor for us, because that's also one of the definitions I was asked for in the show. And then maybe we can actually figure out some of these other topics that we spoke so brazenly about last week, but never really actually defined. Larry, would you mind taking us out?
Sure. This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to the second half of the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5, and we're on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Let's just take a moment to talk about the Atheist Society of Knoxville. ASK was founded in 2002. We're in our 21st year now and have over 1,000 members. We have weekly in-person meetings every Tuesday evening in Knoxville's old city at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria. Look for us inside at the high top table, or if it's pretty outside, go outside on the deck. You can find us online on Facebook, meetup.com, or at our homepage, KnoxvilleAtheists.org. You can also just Google Knoxville Atheists. It's just that simple. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and do a search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one. Start one. That's right. Wombat, where do you want to pick up?
I wanted to talk a lot more about R. Robbins' post with regarding the words that we use as potentially prone to generational changes, and how the change of a definition can actually lead to a lot of conflict with regard to how people might identify with certain terms versus how they express certain terms and how other people interpret them. And so one of the things I realized is how much of the terms that we identify with are inherently just cultural. For example, I identify as like a Black guy. However, when I moved from California to Georgia, that meant a very different thing. You know, being Black in California versus being Black in the South, completely different. One was like something that was like more or less a non-issue, but I always stood out. And the other one was I fit in, but it's a different thing. And if you weren't updated on the program, you're falling behind. And there's a lot of stuff I have to catch up on. Then I moved to Sweden for a while, and being Black meant completely different thing than when I came back here. People were talking to me in like Egyptian and other languages I never heard before. I'm like, oh my gosh, what do you see when you see me? And I realized that I had a very particular view of myself, but I didn't value or understand or appreciate or even was aware of how much other people see me and how I need to be aware of that as well, and how much that influences who I am in a particular culture. And so now if you were asked me like, how do I identify as a Black guy? In my mind, it's more of like, I'm aware of it. I'm aware of an identification aspect. But for me, it's more of like just a descriptor. Like I would describe myself as Black for sure. But it's not that there's a singular flag that I can wave and be like, this is what it means to be Black. I'm a proper representation of what that means to be Black. This is me. This is me 10,000%. It's more of like, hey, it's okay to be Black. I'm just one of a lot of different kinds of Black people out there. I'll be happy to talk to you about my personal experience. I just want to highlight that it's cool to be, you know, an outspoken Black scientist, cool guy. But as far as like identity, like if you were to ask me what I identify, it's like, I like playing disc golf. I like working on my car. Mm-hmm. I like eating burritos. But these are the things that describe me aren't necessarily are me, right? Like it's not necessarily how I'm identifying. It's just really cool ways to describe who I am that like play into my personality. But there are things that I more closely identify with. If you're willing to like have a relationship with me and talk to me, I can tell you what those things are.
Well, since this is a radio show,
yes,
I'd like to tell listeners that I am actually green.
sometimes on the edges. Mm-hmm. So I feel like the things that I identify with are less prone to changing by culture. I feel like that's the general rule. So like when I say I like disc golf, 40 years from now, that might be the same sport, right? Like that's still going to be disc golf. But like what it means to be Black could be a completely different thing compared to when my grandpa was alive to where I am now. So I would love to throw out a question. The things that you identify with versus the things that just describe you. So for example, John Richards, I'm going to throw something out at you, and don't take me it's the wrong way, but you are very English. You take a lot of pride in England, but what it meant to be English from Crusades times all the way to now, like that has changed. A lot of things have changed with like England, and who knows where you will be 100 years from now or whatever. So would you say that's more just aligned with a descriptor, or do you think it's unfair for me to say that you identify with something that could just change and you only identify with it now? I'm searching for a question here. What I would love to just get your thoughts. What do you think?
Well, yeah. What it means to be English has changed enormously during my lifetime, especially as this country has become increasingly cosmopolitan. You know, we now have many people, millions of people who have come back from what used to be the colonies and have settled here. So we're a mixed community now, far more than we were when I was a boy. You never saw anybody who wasn't Anglo-Saxon when I was a boy. But now it's difficult to avoid seeing people who obviously aren't Anglo-Saxon. But Ty, would you consider yourself to be a coconut?
No, I would not consider myself to be a coconut. I could say that's not, that would be an inaccurate descriptor of me. And I also do not identify as a coconut. Yeah, those would be the two things I would say.
You've got the expression in the US, have you? A coconut?
What is a coconut? What are you about to say?
It's brown on the outside and white on the inside.
So I don't assign my values of being able to speak clearly and represent myself professionally as inherently a white attribute. Like, I find like I can easily demonstrate that Black people have always had that skill set.
Yeah.
And I find like the terms of like coconut sort of like, oh, well, you're rough on the outside, but the inside of you is good. I find that inherently problematic as a way to model how people can behave. Well, right. It's sort of like gives too much credit to like a race that had nothing to impact on that.
Yeah. You stereotyped me as an Englishman, but in fact, most of my living relatives are Africans because. About what, over 20 years ago now, I married a Ghanaian woman who was in this country training to be a nurse at the time. And we have two daughters that are mixed. And all of my personal family line are now dead. Or I think there's a couple still alive, but I lost touch with him. But her... because she is a bit younger, so her brothers and sisters and cousins and so on are very much in my personal circle of friends. So if there was a reverse to a coconut, that's what I'd be. What can you think of that's white on the outside, brown in the middle? Is a choc ice? No, not a choc ice. No.
We can keep working on it. Maybe we can work.
Yeah, you have to think of something for me.
But I would say these things would be like, whether they are a bit obtuse, descriptors and not so much identifiers. Like I would say, like there are clearly words that people identify with. I'm an American, or I'm a man, or I'm trans, or I'm, you know, a Foo Fighters fan or something like that. It's like, I understand that you identify strongly with these, but what if Foo Fighters came out with a terrible album? You know, their next album is just like, are you still Foo Fighters? Like, I'm Die Hard. It's like, okay, so like maybe there's a dogmatic approach to like how you are coming with how you identify yourself, because it doesn't seem to be affected by the thing that you're identifying with. And maybe there's a cultural divide. As culture or society moves a certain way, your identity is going with it or against it. And maybe that might enlighten us to the things that we identify with aren't necessarily us, but just ways to describe us. And if that's the case, maybe we can take them away from personally being offended when we're talking about terms and get closer to more of a scientific or empathetic approach to resolving how we should treat each other, particularly people with different identifiers or descriptors. Eric, I'd love to know, what do you identify with versus what would you just say describes you?
Well, definitely this is, you know, something I've talked about with others before that surprises people, but you know, a descriptor for me is, you know, don't have a full head of hair, you know, it is something that I've noticed is something that I feel I get judged by when I first meet a person, you know?
Okay.
It doesn't do anything to identify.
Sure. Historically, you've actually had a full-on
ponytail.
Yeah.
So that's something that, I mean, I'm nowhere near, I think what you as described as being Black has gone through, but it's definitely something I'll put a hat on when I go out to meet new people. Cause it's so much easier than, you get put in a category, I think.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. But okay. In terms of identify, you know, atheism and Sam Harris and, but you're right. Someone can, the Foo Fighters could put out a horribly racist album, which I seriously doubt they ever would. And you know, it would change my opinion.
Sure. They just call it coconuts. They just say, every song's about coconuts. Coconut. It's like, Foo Fighters, what have you done?
You can't have coconuts in a small town.
I want to ask you this then. So like, if you identify as an atheist and for whatever reason, atheist becomes more militant or more in your face about, listen, it's about time we stop subjecting our children to this religious protocol, and we are going to start our own state, and it's going to be the state of Vermont, and this is where the state where only atheists, true atheists are, and everyone who's a real atheist lives here. So let's ask this again. Are you an atheist? Yeah. Are you not an atheist? Now they're looking at you. What's going on there?
No, I'm with you. You know, I identify with something for as long as it, you know, properly, you know, sits well with me. Yeah. If you start changing the way atheists are grouped together and do that. Yeah. And I think that's why a lot of, I've even heard a lot of atheists don't even like the term atheism, because it describes what you're not. It doesn't describe what you are.
Right.
And, you know, humanist, secularist, you know, those are maybe better terms. Famously, Bad Religion's lead singer, Greg Graffin, has said he doesn't like the term atheist. He likes humanist or other things like that. So, yeah, I would.
Yeah, like maybe lowercase atheist, like in the sense of I'm not a part of a group. Like I'm not like fundamentally, you know, screwing, but I am an atheist. But like, let's talk about what that means. And if you don't want to talk about what that means, then you don't really want to know me. So at best, don't identify me as that. Just describe me as that, unless you actually want to understand where I'm coming from. You know,
good point. Like, go.
I was just going to say that when a group generally has an awful lot of negative baggage, you might want to identify as not being part of that group, like I'm not a MAGA type of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's important in some places to identify as a negative.
Right. Mm-hmm. Only because we understand that the words can have baggage that changes with it over time. Yeah. Though I do find the fight with letting people know that I'm an atheist is part just fighting the bad swell of propaganda that's presented with atheism. Yeah. It's to show them an example of, no, I am an atheist. I want you to know that. Not because I want you to be an atheist, but just because I want you to know what an atheist looks like. Yeah. You know? And I find that to be inherently valuable, because I don't think the wellspring of bad press has gotten to the point where I can't express that in among my friends and family, and even like just average coworkers, and just present myself and just let that be the case. But that not everybody can do that. I also understand it too. I am privileged in that capacity. What do you think, Larry?
When it comes to using the word atheist, I'm not going to avoid using it just because it offends the very people that made it a curse in the first place.
There you go, Larry. I like it. I like it. So I am willing to throw that out as in my mind as like, hey, this is how you can describe me. And I want anyone else, you know, who has this descriptor on them to say, oh, wait a second, maybe they're not necessarily bad people. And then if you want to talk about what that means to me, like how I identify as an atheist, what do I do to like demonstrate my atheism and express that? I could be something that I can both identify and be used to describe. So they aren't mutually exclusive terms. I can say, I identify with a lot of aspects of really the one main aspect of atheism, which is I'm just not convinced that a God exists. That's really all there is to it. But I can describe past that all the impacts that's had on how I think rationally and what I think about other religions and how I hold conversations with people, what I do on the weekends talking to you guys. I think there's a lot that goes into it. So I think that might... Oh, go ahead, John Richards.
Well, I've been on a journey because having been born to non-believing parents and living in a culture at the time for the first 20 years of my life, I suppose, where nobody had the slightest bit of interest in religion. It didn't matter what you called yourself. But then I became aware of very religious people who had demonized the word atheist. And people like me began to look for a softer way of describing ourselves. And some of us called ourselves agnostics or secularists or humanists. Mm. In fact, we've come through that now. We're more out there, you know, willing to be forthright and say that we are atheists, because there's a couple of good reasons. One is there's no evidence for any God. And the other one is religions are divisive. So, you know, there's two good reasons not to be a member of any religion.
Let me throw a counter to that, just because I know the comments are already being typed up. There is real evidence for God. The thing is, it just doesn't reach the standard to cause one to be valid or justified in believing that there is a God. Just because I wrote a book that says a God existed is not enough evidence for me to say, oh, well, now our God exists. So yeah. The evidence that is out there is lacking, which is why I don't believe in a God. In my mind, if a God is an incredible being, I should have an incredible amount of evidence. I have not seen that amount of evidence. Mm-hmm. Yep. So as a result, I have nothing but my lack of convincing. And if I'm not convinced, I'm not going to believe it. And so that's where I'm at as an atheist. And yes, I absolutely agree. Religion is divisive. I think it is essentially a cell of terms. When you think about a religion, it's basically just a cult of terms, right? That people throw at each other in terms of dividing people into groups, in terms of how they want to identify with themselves, with regard to how they call things. And they make a very dogmatic microculture that is very inflexible with the move of society and particularly the advancements of science. Yeah. And so when you have a situation like that, you basically have essentially, in my mind, a very intolerant group that can only survive by forcing culture to change or not change with it, or like press culture into its shape, or further separate people to the point where they're not willing to talk to each other anymore so that you can keep your cell isolated. And I find both situations terrible. And that's why I say we need to rely on science and empathy.
Here's an interesting thing, because a couple of weeks ago, I went to Bristol because I'd been invited to speak to Bristol humanists. You know, I go around the country and I do presentations and I do debates and stuff and I organize events. But anyway, in Bristol, at this desecrated church, they hold their meetings. Bristol humanists hold their meetings in a building that was formerly a church. And so the first thing I did was I asked them, I said, listen, I belong to Humanism UK too, like you. And I'm very pleased to have been invited to speak to this humanist meeting. But now, before I start, put your hands up if you actually consider yourselves not only to be a humanist, but also an atheist. Everyone except two.
Everyone except two raised their hand?
Yep.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You could. So were they religious then? Would that be the only?
Yeah. Did you get a chance to talk to them more?
Well, as individuals, no. Yes. But I delivered my presentation, which was about 20
minutes. Okay. No, I was just wondering if you had a chance to flesh out the reasons for being a humanist, but not claiming to be an atheist.
I'd have a guess. Can I just hazard? Yeah. Cause you didn't get it. Sure. I bet they think they're agnostic. And it's the same. It's the trouble with definitions where like, oh, right. No, I'm not positive there's no God. I'm an agnostic.
That would be my guess.
Right. Too. And that's why I love the science approach to this, because we need to have these definitions well defined. And that way we understand what we're saying when we say things. That's well sort words.
Well, let's take a moment to define it.
Thank you, Larry. I was just about to go to it. So I would say agnostic is a measure of me not believing in a God
and knowing, it's because
I don't have a soul. It's because I have a soul.
Agnostic has to do with knowledge, not belief.
You're being racist against me. Agnostic means I have a soul and I hate God. And it's all about belief. It's a belief statement, 10,000%. And atheism just means I love eating babies. All right, go on.
I didn't know you were being tongue in cheek. Sorry.
Well, listen, I've come up with the reverse of coconut.
Which
fits me.
Okay, it's okay.
Christmas cake, white on the outside.
Okay, let's get the real definitions out. Would anyone like to do the real definitions? Larry, go for it.
Yeah. Well, agnostic, the word gnostic comes from the Greek word knowledge. So if you're an agnostic about God, you claim to have no knowledge of God. If theism comes from the Greek word for belief, if you're an atheist, you don't believe in God. If you're a theist, you do. Personally, I'm both. I don't know that there's a God or not, but I don't believe in any. And so if I don't believe in any, no matter what my knowledge state is, that part of me is atheism.
Bujo, do you have anything to add to that?
No, that's the perfect definition. But I like to think of gnosticism do you know there's a God or you don't know there's a God, and spot on. And those people that didn't raise their hand, I guarantee they think of themselves as somewhere in between an atheist and a theist, which really practically doesn't exist. You know, you can't.
I'm both. Yeah, agnostic.
You can't live.
Yeah, you can't live on a line. Mutually exclusive terms. Yeah.
Yeah, but exactly. You can't be not an atheist and not a theist. You can't be in between.
Correct. There's no middle ground there.
There's no middle ground.
Yeah. Yeah. On the idea of like, it's a true dichotomy to either be a theist or not a theist. We've just called not a theist an atheist because that A in the front just means not A.
Yep.
So it's a true lack of middle ground. It's one of the logical absolutes. So I want to throw out, because we were specifically asked this, how do we define sex and gender? And I want to throw it out to John Richards first, because he is a scientist, biologist. How would you define sex? And if you'd love to tackle it, how would you define gender?
Good question. Sex is a biological characteristic. Mm. And I've just read an article by Richard Dawkins that he wrote about 10 years ago. Because sex is one of those few things that is actually polar with no middle. You know, most things, they have a range and they extend from extreme one end to extreme the other. And a normal distribution curve, sex isn't like that. There's only vanishingly small 0.02% of the population that is not identifiably by their chromosomes as male or female.
Larry, you're going to say something, then I'm going to say something immediately afterwards. Can we just stay on sex real quick, Vic? Larry, sure. What's your thought?
No, I was just going to say that there are masculine women and effeminate males. You know, there are a whole spectrum there. Not even getting into bisexual.
We were talking about sex. We were talking about sex, like specifically your biological characteristics, what you do personally or how you decide to dress or what hobbies you take on. I would throw that outside of the sex point of view. Sex is...
You're talking about the actual chromosome.
I'm talking about gametes. I'm talking about like the way how I see sex is sort of like, it's in my opinion, also a binary system. I have a left foot and I have a right foot. I can wear shoes. I can wear a left shoe and a right shoe, and someone else can wear a left shoe and a right shoe, but you could also be barefoot. You could also wear two left shoes on both your feet. You can also wear two right shoes, but you still only have two shoes. Just because you have no shoes or you're wearing two of the same shoe on both your feet doesn't mean that you came up with a brand new kind of shoe. And so I'm aware that there's people that have modifications to their chromosomes or weird offshoots that seem like they're like a brand new sex, but it's not a brand new shoe to wear two different of the same shoes on both feet. It's still two ingredients that were just arranged in such a way that makes it harder for you to walk in a sense, which demands some sympathy and care and empathy for that regard. But I wouldn't say like, oh, you came up with a brand new shoe, you're shoeless, right?
Okay.
Like,
so yeah, there's not a third sex. I'll agree there.
Yeah. And not having shoes doesn't mean that you figured out and invented a new kind of shoe. So like in my head, it's just combinations of like two very basic chromosomes to end up with like a biological characteristic. And that's what sex is. Now, as far as what gender is like our societal, cultural, our stereotypical, our psychological, our means of expression, like that goes, I'll give credence that I don't have a scientific appreciation for gender as much as I do sex. And that's my personal bias as just a scientist. But I understand that there's a lot of other categories that gender falls or encapsulates, and that sex is very much like its own specific thing. Bujo, I saw you raise your hand.
Yeah, I guess I'm not an expert in any of this, but I did take slight issue with the way you framed it, John. You acted like this is, what did you call the term atheist and theist, a polar something tie? Would you? Absolute. You called it absolute. Anyway, you used the term
mutually non-exclusive or mutually exclusive. There's a logical absolute that says there's no middle ground.
There's no middle ground. You kind of framed sex as no middle ground, John. But then you pointed out 0.02% there. So there is there a middle ground or isn't there a middle ground? I guess I'm confused.
Bujo, may I address that? I think it was that's why I brought up the shoe example. So yes,
okay.
It's basically like there's two sexes, and there is some degree of overlap between the two. But that degree of overlap, or the lack of a sex that can't be assigned, isn't the representation of a brand new third tier of
sex. Okay.
It's a binary system with some. With on the individual basis, some overlap, but overall, it's something that's like very easily categorized as like it's just two things.
Yeah,
it's having two shoes. Go ahead, John.
It's strongly binary. The proportions of those who don't fit into one or the other category at birth is tiny and negligible. Right. However,
and the ones that
this is a moving feast, isn't it? Of course, what you are equipped with at birth, then has to go through development. And puberty in particular is where nuances can be introduced. You can be like Caster Semenya, the South African runner, who is classed as intersex. She is actually male, but her testes never descended.
Oh, that's
interesting. She resembles external morphology a female. So that's the gray area, if you like,
right? And it's not a new sex, it's just like it's a male that didn't have their testes descend. So like that's just what it is. It's like a guy wearing two left shoes. It's not a you came up with a brand new shoe. It's like, no, I'm just, it's the same two, I'm just wearing them differently. It's like, oh, or I get it, okay, cool, the same 2 feet, just wearing my shoes differently. Anyway, we didn't even get to gender. Now we're going to get so many comments. Anyway, feel free to leave them. You can find me at Let's Chat on this YouTube channel, as well as on our radio. Feel free to reach out to me on letschatsc@gmail.com. John Richards, where can we find your stuff?
Free Thought Productions channel.
Nice.
That's where most of my stuff goes. But of course, I'm also, I have a considerable presence on Atheism UK channel.
Cool. Maybe we will touch on gender next episode and other areas of dogmas presenting its head and lead ourselves to a better conclusion. Bujo, anything you'd recommend we check out?
I need to get a fancy URL and just point everyone to one site and just put a bunch of stuff on it, because I never share.
If you have a SharePoint account, you can do that immediately.
All right. Yeah, and you're right.
Larry Rhodes, where can we find your book on about how souls exist and how we need to start believing in them?
Well, my book is called Atheism, What's It All About? It's available on Amazon. My content can be found at digitalfreethought.com. Be sure to click on the blog button for our radio show archives, atheist songs, and many articles on the subject. My YouTube handle is @doubter5. If you're having trouble leaving religious beliefs behind, you can get help from with that at recoveringfromreligion.org. Remember, everybody is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life. And we'll see you next Wednesday night at 7 o'clock on WOZO Radio. Say bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye, buddy.